We are so lucky, Paul, to be able to have the opportunity to sit down with Bill Miller, legendary investor, widely respected for his ability to outperform the S&P 500 with his Legg Mason Value Trust for 15 consecutive years, an unheard of track record. And he joins us here, currently chairman and chief investment officer of Miller Value Partners with $2 billion of assets under management. So, Bill, thank you for being with us. I want to start with this idea of outperformance, because you have achieved that. And I'm wondering, as people talk about Bill Gross, for example, talking about how it's increasingly difficult to outperform in an era of indexed funds, do you agree?
I think it's always been difficult to outperform. In fact, when Warren Buffett set up his partnership in the 1950s, he said that he would consider it a good result if he could outperform the Dow Jones Industrial Index, and pointed out that I think there might have been 80 or 85 mutual funds at the time, and only about 5% of those had been able to do that over the past 10 years. So it's always been difficult. I think it's trickier now a little bit, not because of index funds, but because of the changed, I'd say, polarity of the market after the financial crisis, and specifically that the financial crisis was so devastating to so many people that effectively people are risk and volatility phobic. And so whenever there's a perception of increased risk, or the stock market volatility goes up, everybody rushes to, quote, reduce their risk exposure, and that leads to these kind of cascading events like we saw in the fourth quarter.
Well, Bill, we've seen a tremendous move towards passive investment across the investment horizon. Maybe that was accelerated a little bit by some of the things coming out of the financial crisis. Is that a trend you expect to continue, or do you think there's a day for active advisors?
No, I think the trend is likely to continue. I saw a study by, I think, Mercer that indicated that the market could still perform its functions of price discovery if over 70% of the market, stock market, were indexed. And I think the trend is, you know, it's longstanding, and I think it's there for a good reason, which is that, A, it's very difficult to outperform, and B, so many people that are trying to outperform are afraid of tracking error, going away from the market, especially on the downside, that they're effectively closet indexers. So they're basically high-priced passive investors. And so the movement isn't so much from active to passive. It's from expensive passive to cheap passive.
Well, it seems like that's a no-brainer as to what people would want. You know, you talked about how it's always been hard to outperform, and yet you did so for more than a decade straight with your fund. What's the secret? Please reveal it right now, right here.
You know, I think that I'll answer it a slightly different way. I'll answer it in two different ways. Right? The way in which we invest, and people can outperform a wide variety of different strategies, but we're value investors, and so we're looking to buy businesses at a discount to what they're worth. And I'd say that the secret is that earnings have very little to do with what they're worth. Probably the best example is Amazon, where people for 15 or 18 years would say, oh, it's grossly overpriced because they make no money. And my answer to that was always, well, they came public with a $400 million market value, and now they have an $800 billion market value, and they never sold any stock. Where'd that value come from? And the answer is that they created a lot of value. They just didn't report a lot of profits under GAAP accounting. And one of the things that I try to impress upon people is there's a reason it's called generally accepted accounting principles and not divinely inspired accounting principles or immaculately conceived
right.
accounting principles.
Well, it's interesting as you talk about how the amount of money that they actually are bringing in at any given time isn't necessarily what the company is worth. Interesting to say this at a time when Lyft just started trading, and we have all of the IPOs, the big tech darlings that are slated to go public later this year. Do you think that that's a similar situation to Amazon, or do you think it's different because they waited for so much longer and they're coming at sort of a peak market valuation time?
You know, I haven't looked at Lyft carefully enough to have an informed judgment about it. I think all of those companies that you're talking about are very rapidly growing companies doing something different from what other people had done 10 or 20 years ago. And so they've generated a lot of excitement because they've grown revenues very rapidly. It's less clear to me what the economic model of the business is sustainably longer term.
So, Bill, we've had some tremendous volatility, you know, just over the last 4 or 5 months with that meltdown in December, you know, I guess hitting the trough Christmas Eve, and then this great start to 2019 with the S&P up over 12%. What is your view of the market right now?
Oh, I think the market, you know, we're going to end the quarter up somewhere 12, 13%.
Yep.
I think the market is very attractively priced relative to alternatives. You know, the bonds yield, what, 2.4%, right, something like that. They trade at 40 times a cash flow stream that isn't going to grow. And stocks trade around 16 times forward earnings, and with a cash flow stream that's going to grow around 6%, generating a lot of free cash. So I don't think that the alternatives to stocks are particularly attractive. And I think that stocks, by the way, are actually cheap. Well, it's this way. There are a lot of stocks out there that are very cheap and that I think are going to do very, very well.
In the United States?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Any names?
Yeah. Well, Amazon's still 20% off the high. And if you look at AWS, Amazon Web Services, and you look at the advertising business that they've just recently been growing, those two businesses alone in about 3.5 years, if they're valued similarly to what Facebook and Google were valued at when they were in the high growth phase, or that something like Salesforce is currently valued at, those two businesses alone will be worth more than Amazon's entire market cap.
What about the banking sector? Because we've seen them really beaten up based on the narrowing yield curve and fears of growth. If stocks still look good, then that means growth isn't that bad. Attractive valuations there?
Oh, yeah. We love the financials broadly speaking, but we own J.P. Morgan. We own Bank America.
Are you adding here?
We have full positions in those. If we didn't have them, we would be buying them here. Yeah.
What are some of the other, so is there any sector that just scares you right here, that whether from a valuation perspective or you can't get your hands around the fundamentals? Because it seems like, again, with a 12% move here in the S&P, there's been pretty broad performance here.
I think that utilities and consumer staples are unattractive in here. They're trading at high valuations relative to history. That's because they're low volatility, they're predictable, and so they perform a risk mitigation function in many people's portfolios. But in terms, and so obviously if we have a deflation, if the world gets, right, a lot worse, they'll continue to do fine. But I think we're going to settle in here to a, 1.8% to 2.1% growth rate. And they're not competitive in that kind of an environment.
There seems to be a real kind of dissonance in the market right now, because there are a lot of people saying that U.S. equities are still very attractive. But then you also have bonds that are gaining dramatically, yields dropping, and indicating some sort of downturn or slowdown. Do you think that those two ideas are incoherent, that basically you can't have bonds continuing to rally with yields continuing to go lower, with stocks still ripping higher?
Well, I'd put it in a little broader context. So bonds had a 35-year bull market from 1981 to roughly, 2013, 14.
Yeah.
Right? And so bonds are in a bear market right now. Bond yields bottomed in 2016. So at 138, I think. And so now we're at 230, 240. So, yes, they've rallied from where they were last year. But I think that, if you look at stocks are a lot higher than they were in 2016. So I think that stocks, and the reason for that is that stocks are more attractive than bonds. And bonds will protect you on, if we have a recession. But they're not going to help you if growth just chugs along at 1.5% or 2%. You're going to gradually lose money in bonds over time.
You mentioned the R word, recession. What is your view of this inverted yield curve, and how much concern should investors have as it relates to potentially recession?
Very little.
Okay.
People are, again, not thinking about, I think, the yield curve in a way that reflects what's going on there. So you've got $10 trillion worth of sovereign bonds of negative yields.
Yeah.
And you've had this financial repression, whether it be Japan buying half of the JGBs, or what Draghi did, or what the U.S. Fed has done. So that has suppressed yields globally. And actually U.S., the yields in the U.S. I think are reflective of that. And also, to emphasize again, the financial crisis changed people's perceptions of risk.
So here we are at the GAIM conference. There are all these students here who are looking to go into the business. What advice would you give a budding young professional looking to go into finance right now?
Well, I think, finance is actually, this is not something that I think people are happy about, but finance has been gradually gaining market share in the global economy for a long time. And it changes where the action is. So that, right now the action is in VC and startups and things like that, maybe hedge funds, not in mutual funds, which are in secular decline. But I'd say the most important thing is just get in. Get a job in finance, and once you're in, then it's easier to move around to something that might be more attractive.
But asset management, still an attractive career?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, it's a good business. It's a business that's under secular pressure for the reasons I talked about, which is the move to passive, for example. And I think there's, you know, there's, it's highly regulated, so that's a negative in my opinion. But no, it's an attractive business.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned regulation, and obviously a significant layer of regulation came upon the financial services industry after the financial crisis. Is that just the new way of life, or do you think that, you know, as time moves on, some of those regulations may peel off this industry and would allow maybe improve the profitability of the financial services industry?
You know, I think I agree with Jamie Dimon, and when Jamie said it's not a question of more or less regulation, it's a question of good or bad regulation. So I think we want to get rid of bad regulation.
Right.
And good regulations, we can have more of those.
Bill Miller, thank you so much for all this time that you've given us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lisa.
Bill Miller is Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Miller Value Partners with $2 billion under management. But Bill Miller, legendary investor, he outperformed his leg-based in value trust, outperformed the S&P 500 benchmark for 15 straight years.
It can be done.
It can be done. It's difficult. It's always been difficult. But Bill Miller has done it.